Hello and welcome to New Things Under the Sun. I'm Matt Clancy. Today is the fourth and final podcast about patent data. This one is kind of a summary and synthesis, but also an extension kind of what we've learned from the rest of the week. There were three earlier posts, one about kind of how many inventions get patented. That was the first one. The second about if you know information about patents, how predictive is that of other forms or other measures of innovation? And then yesterday's was about if you look at studies based on patent data and studies that are about similar phenomenon but are not based on patent data, do they kind of get similar results? And I actually use New Things Under the Sun and what I've written on it as sort of the data set for that. So anyway, today we're going to talk about kind of the big question, can we learn about innovation from patent data? So of course, the tagline for New Things Under the Sun is what academia knows about innovation. But a large share of the academic literature is premised on using patents to measure innovation, and it's not clear patents actually do measure innovation. Maybe academia knows less than it thinks. Now, at first glance, patents seem like an ideal measure of innovation. They're detailed, available for a huge range of technologies, and they go back in time for hundreds of years. And by providing an incentive for inventors to disclose their inventions, as well as a screening system staffed by experts, they hold the promise of providing us a large-scale, high-quality survey of innovation. But patents also have some red flags. For many years, the company with the most patents per year was IBM. Now, surely a company that innovates, but not the company most people probably think of as like the most innovative company in America. Moreover, it's not hard to find lists of important inventions that never received a patent, or patents that seem to just correspond to junk. And I think the following figure, which you can't see, is perhaps the best single case against using patents to measure technological progress. The figure compares the count of annual applications at the U.S. Patent Office against another common, though also flawed, measure of technological progress, that is the 10-year average growth rate in capital utilization adjusted total factor productivity growth. In the figure, total factor productivity growth drops sharply in the 1970s. I should say it spans sort of 1960 to the present day, but total factor productivity starts high, drops sharply in the 1970s, and over this period, patent application counts are basically just steady, like a straight line. Both of them begin to rise from 1980 through the year 2000, but then total factor productivity plunges even lower to newer lows, but patent applications actually continue to rise, and they actually approach new highs. And, you know, I looked at patent applications, but you get basically the same kind of pattern if you look at granted patents in the USA. So not only do the two fail to track each other, but if you actually plot them in like just a scatter plot, they're actually negatively correlated. And so this chart suggests patents are actually positively useless as a way to measure innovation, maybe even worse than useless, because they might be inversely correlated with technological progress. But I don't actually agree. I don't think patents are useless, much less that they're worse than useless. Instead, I think patents give us just a biased sample of inventive activity. Good work with patents is about understanding and adjusting for those biases. Handled well, we can learn a lot that is useful from them. And that view is based on a couple lines of evidence that I've written about before. So let's start with a straightforward question. How many inventions are patented? Well, we can start with the good news, at least for researchers who want to use patents to study innovation. Recent surveys find more than 90% of U.S. R&D is performed by companies that have at least one patent. Patents also appear to be a pretty good measure of innovation in the pharmaceutical sector. But other lines of evidence are less promising. In manufacturing, if we survey firms, they claim to protect about half their new products with patents and a third of their newly invented processes with patents. Another option is to use innovation prize competitions to generate lists of inventions. And then we can see how many entrants or winners in those competitions have associated patents for the inventions. Many papers have done this, and they generally find patent matches for only 10 to 30% of inventions, with one major exception. There was a study from Japan that finds nearly all the prize winners have an associated patent. Another study measuring invention by the introduction of new consumer product or of new consumer products that had new UPC codes associated with them, mostly in the grocery and drug stores, also found that about 20% of new products were introduced by firms with patents in closely related product categories. These different kind of matching approaches are probably lower bound estimates on how many inventions are patented, since they're going to miss patents that don't seem to be related to an invention, but do in fact protect them. Nonetheless, I think we can be pretty sure that, you know, less than half of inventions probably get patented. And this literature also finds a great deal of a variation in the propensity to patent across different sectors. So a minority of inventions are patented, probably. But that's only half the story. It tells us something about the share of inventions that are patented. But if we're going to measure innovation with patents, we also want to know the share of patents that measure or describe innovations. Because on that criteria, some patents are pretty questionable. And I have a excerpt basically a part of a patent, and this is patent number 6,368,000,227, and it is for a method of swinging on a swing. And it sort of seems like the paradigmatic, like, frivolous patent. It's like a way of swinging on a swing where you pull the chain so you go sideways instead of front and back. But actually, if you like kind of dig in, it's like actually kind of, I don't know if you think it's a sweet story or not, but it's basically about like a patent attorney who helped his 5-year-old son get a patent. And it's not like they were vigorously enforcing this patent or, and it is expired now. But anyway, it's an example of something that's in the patent record and probably does not correspond to what we would think of as technological progress. So what can we generalize? It's going to be hard to second guess the patent office and assess how many patents are assigned to meritorious inventions. But we can explore kind of a related question: how many patents are valuable? Now, if a patent is not valuable, it's more likely that the underlying invention is not valuable either. Though it could also be that the invention is valuable and the patent just does a very bad job of helping you capture that value. For example, manufacturing firms and surveys say only about a third of their inventions are well protected by patents, although note they claim to protect half of their products with patents, so more. Now, one place to start is the share of patents where the patent holder finds it worth their while to pay the fees to keep a patent active. In the USA, as of March 2024, it cost $2,000 to keep your patent in force after 4 years. It costs an additional $3,760 to keep it in force for beyond 8 years, and then another $7,700 to maintain it beyond 12 years. If you're a smaller patent holder, like an individual or a very small organization, you can get discounts on those, though. Given those prices, if you choose not to renew your patent, you're implicitly admitting that you don't expect the patent to bring in more than a few hundred to a few thousand dollars per year for the rest of the patent's life. It turns out that people frequently find it not worth paying several thousand dollars to keep their patents in force for more years. For example, in Bessin 2008, 20% of patents granted in 1994 were abandoned after just 4 years. Almost 60% were abandoned before the end of their term. Arts and Fleming 2017 finds somewhat more renewals for a sample of patents granted from 1981 to 2002 by inventors with more than one invention. A lot of other work has reached, though, a kind of similar conclusion, that the value of patents is very skewed, with a lot of patents not worth much, and a small number of patents accounting for a large share of total patent value. For example, in a sample of the patents of publicly traded firms from 1926 to 2010, Kogan et al. 2017 find that the average patent received slightly more than 10 citations from other patents, and that's commonly interpreted as kind of a signal of technological significance if other patents are citing you. But 16% of those patents received no citations at all, and the top 5% received more than 38. All told, it's plausible that the majority of what patents describe just isn't a big part of technological progress. Now, in fact, this issue isn't as much of a deal breaker as you might think in terms of using patents for data, because there are a lot of ways that you can kind of sort the wheat from the chaff and eliminate many of the junk patents from any kind of analysis. One common approach is to restrict attention to what are called triadic patents, which are inventions where patent protection has been sought in the big three markets. That's the USA, Europe, and Japan. Since it is costly to apply for a patent, applying for protection in multiple markets is a signal that the patent holder believes the patented invention will be worth enough in multiple markets to justify the hassle of application. Another common approach is to weigh patents by the number of citations they receive from other patents. One needs to be careful in how you interpret what a patent citation means, and I've actually got a post about whether you can interpret them as sort of measures of knowledge spillovers. Get a link to it in the post or in the newsletter. But a large literature has found that the number of citations a patent receives is correlated with other proxies for the value of the patent. And you can check out the newsletter for some citations. This might be, for example, because valuable technologies attract copycats who differentiate their product to the minimum extent necessary to secure a new patent, but who nonetheless cite the original patent. Because actually, if they don't cite a relevant patent, the patent examiner can just add that citation themselves. Another common approach is to focus exclusively on the most highly cited patents in a given sort of technology class in a given year. And then another approach focuses on the text of patents, looking for those that introduce new technology words and phrases. Another approach looks at how the stock market value of publicly traded firms moves when a patent gets granted. Now, none of these approaches are perfect, of course, but they all go a long way towards addressing the problem that we probably care a lot more about some of the inventions described in patents than others, and so we need ways to sort of identify those patents and set aside a lot of the other ones. But there's another way to see how serious a problem it is that not all inventions are patented and not all patents are genuine inventions. Instead of starting with inventions and trying to match them to patents, another option is to start with data on patenting and see how well it predicts other measures of innovation. For example, are firms with more patents or industries with more patents more innovative by other kinds of measures? And a lot of papers do this, and they tend to find that patents weakly predict innovation. For example, studies find when a firm has more patents, it's more likely to offer products with new UPC codes. Another study finds that when semiconductor firms have more patents, they're more likely to offer products with improved storage capacity. In yet another study, we observe a similar relationship between rates of technical improvement and the number of patents across 28 different technologies, measuring progress in each technology by whatever measure is kind of appropriate. So it might be kilowatt hours per dollar for some technologies, lumen hours per dollar for others, etc. And patenting is also correlated with R&D spending. But there's an important caveat. As a general rule, the link between patenting and other measures of innovation is pretty small. Increase patenting by 10%, and you'll typically see much less than a 10% increase in whatever your measure of innovation you're using, maybe on the order of 1%. That makes sense if patents are not covering the majority of inventions and if a large share of the patents don't really point to valuable inventions. Indeed, there's also a class of evidence where the link between patenting and an alternative popular measure of innovation is too shaky to really identify at all, unless you first clean up the patent data using some of the methods that we discussed above. If you compare raw patent counts to total factor productivity growth for firms or industries, you'll generally not find a robust association between those two. That actually echoes kind of the results of this figure that I discussed at the top at the beginning of this podcast. Where we compared raw patent applications to total factor productivity growth in the USA and saw there was not really any systematic link, and in fact, maybe a negative correlation. But if you work to separate out good and bad patents, studies do tend to find having more valuable patents is pretty robustly correlated with faster productivity growth. Indeed, if you used improved patent data, measures of innovation based on patents and productivity start to line up. To take one example, Kogan et al. 2017 attempted to estimate the dollar value of patents by looking at how the stock price of patent holders changes when the patent is granted. Using their estimates of the dollar value of patents, Kogan and co-authors can improve on just doing a simple count of patents over time, because instead of treating all patents as identical, they're going to derive the total estimated value of all patents granted in a year. So some patents might be worth a lot. Some patents might not be worth much at all. We're going to add them all together. And in the newsletter, I've got a figure that shows a solid black line kind of tracking the estimated dollar value of all patents divided by total GDP in the same year that they're granted, and then taking a log of that value. And if you stick on top of that a graph of the capital utilization adjusted TFP growth series that I kicked off this post with, they line up a lot better than the sort of terrible lineup that they do if you just use raw patent applications. They especially match reasonably well if you think of the patent data as probably leading and being a couple of years ahead of the TFP data, since there'll typically be a lag between when new technology gets invented, which might be represented by the patents, and when it is widely adopted and hence can start to affect productivity in total factor productivity growth. To take one more example, Kalyani 2024 uses text analysis to identify what he calls creative patents, that is, those containing an unusually high number of new technical phrases. In the figure below, which again you can't see, in green he tracks the changes in the number of creative patents per capita against decadal TFP growth rates. He's also got some other data on the chart that I won't bother describing. As with Kogan et al. 2017, Kalyani's creative patent series does a better job of matching changes in TFP growth. And I'll describe, basically, there's been a long decline in the growth rate of TFP growth, total factor productivity growth, from 1930 down to a low in 1990. And over that whole period, there's also been a sort of steady per capita decline in the number of these creative patents. Remember, those are patents that introduce a lot of new technical phrases. There was an increase in these patents beginning in, the 1980s and peaking in the 1990s, and that sort of anticipates a similar increase in TFP growth, and then they both began to fall again together in the 2000s and kind of track each other. So patents are noisy, but especially if we try to filter out some of that noise, they do seem to be correlated with lots of different ways of measuring innovation. And the good news is that there are just so many patents, plenty enough to do a well-powered statistical analysis. So long as patents contain signal, as well as noise, in a big enough sample, the signal can shine through and teach us a lot in aggregate. But the trouble is not really so much that the link between patents and innovation is noisy, and very noisy, in fact. The problem is really, I think, that the noise is not random. So, to illustrate the problems of bias, let's suppose we wanted to know whether one city was more innovative than another, and let's call these cities Metropolis and Gotham. Suppose Metropolis has more patents than Gotham. Does that mean Metropolis is likely to be more innovative than Gotham? Well, the first issue is that there's substantial variation in the propensity to patent inventions across different technology fields. In a survey of the R&D practices of manufacturers, which I discussed in an earlier post, Cohen, Nelson, and Walsh, 2000, found that newly invented products are patented about half the time in the USA, and newly invented processes less than a third of the time. So even if all industries patent products and process inventions at the same rate, industries where a greater share of technological progress is attributable to process inventions will have a smaller share of technological progress reflected in the patent record. But in fact, industries do not patent products and processes at the same rate either. That same survey found that the average respondent claims to patent 49% of their product inventions. But for 8 out of the 34 industries in their sample, that figure was below 33%, and for 4, it was above 66%. So if Metropolis has more patents than Gotham, it might merely be that Metropolis is composed of industries with a greater propensity to patent their inventions. But there are other kinds of bias as well. For example, larger firms appear more likely to patent their inventions. Mezzanotte and Simcoe 2022 finds larger firms are much more likely to rate patents as important in the business R&D and innovation survey that paper covers. For example, 69% of firms with more than $1 billion in annual sales rate patents as somewhat or very important, compared to just 24% of firms with annual sales below $10 million. This relationship also holds when you compare responses across firms belonging to the same sector in the same year. Argente et al. 2023 also finds that larger firms are likely to have more patents per new product, with the largest firms having roughly twice as many patents per new product as the smallest firms. And both of those papers are discussed in more detail in sort of previous podcasts or newsletters. So if Metropolis has more patents than Gotham, it might also be that it is the headquarters of more like large firms compared to Gotham, which will tend to patent at a higher rate. Even looking at firms of similar size and belonging to the same industry, though, there's significant variation in the propensity to patent across firms and across time. Mezzanotte and Simcoe provide some suggestive evidence on this front by computing a measure of patent intensity, that is, patents divided by R&D spending. So if this number is low, it means you put out a lot of patents for every dollar of R&D you spend. Maybe you're patenting most of your inventions. If it's high, you know, you're spending a lot for every patent you do, which either is maybe that your inventions are expensive, or you're just rarely patenting what you invent. A regression that tries to predict patent intensity with information on the size of a firm and its industry can only explain about 14% of the variance in patent intensity. The rest of that variation is going to be due to firms in the same industry of roughly the same size, differing in how much they've patented for every dollar of R&D they spend, and to firms varying across time how many patents they seek per dollar of R&D. So if Metropolis has more patents than Gotham, it could also be down to idiosyncrasies in the firms in Metropolis and how they think about the value of patenting relative to firms in Gotham. Maybe they just have a culture of patenting there. In short, if Metropolis has more patents than Gotham, it could be that this is because the city has more innovation going on. But there are several other possibilities as well, and these other factors could swamp genuine differences in the rate of innovation. Now, these kinds of issues probably help account for the breakdown of the relationship between total U.S. patenting and U.S. total factor productivity growth across time, which was that relationship we discussed at the beginning of this podcast. Over the time period covered in that figure, 1960 to the present day, there appears to have been an increase in the share of R&D performed by the biomedical sector, which is also disproportionately likely to patent its inventions. There's also been an increase in the share of economic activity performed by very large firms who are more likely to patent. And additionally, legal changes in the 1980s may have made patenting more attractive for all firms and expanded the set of patentable sort of subject matter. And I actually have links to sort of justify all those claims in the newsletter. And actually, there's probably been links throughout that I have been sort of silently omitting, mostly in the form, mostly footnotes that I'm not reading. Finally, total factor productivity itself is not perfect. And that could be another reason for the mismatch. So one way to think about this is that a bunch of different factors jointly determine how many patents you observe. One of those factors actually is innovation, but there's a lot else in there too. So head-to-head counts of patents across firms, cities, industries, or years is not going to be a great way to compare innovation rates. But head-to-head counts of raw patents is not generally what academic studies are doing. In careful academic work, you can adjust for these various confounds one by one, removing the influence of these other factors and leaving behind variation that is mostly driven by changes in innovation. At least that's the hope. Instead of comparing patenting across all firms and years, break all the firms into their different industries, and then within each industry, compare patenting rates across firms. And then break all the firms in each industry into different size categories and compare patents across firms that are of similar sizes. And then actually go a step further and do this exercise year by year. Better yet, find the average rate of patenting for each firm to account for sort of differing industrial and firm-level patenting propensities, and find the average rate of patenting for all firms in a particular year to account for maybe changes in the appeal of patenting, and then look to see when a firm's patenting is systematically different from its own long-run average and the average across firms in that year. For example, if you've got two firms, one of them tends to patent 10 patents per year, one tends to patent 1,000 patents per year, and you know, in the year 2000, everybody patented twice as much as normal. Well, you know, a firm that sort of deviates from that trend is telling us, and its own long-run trend is telling us something about its propensity to do something that is maybe closely related to innovation rather than its identity or what's going on that affects all firms in the industry. So we can then ask, though, but do all these corrections really work? Maybe the biases are just too subtle for sort of even careful work to sort of rule out. Now, one way to check would be to identify settings where the same general phenomenon is investigated in multiple ways, sometimes with patents, sometimes with alternative data sources. And if the patent data is hopelessly compromised and biases can't be reliably removed, well, then we would expect studies using patent data to get maybe different kinds of results than studies that don't rely on patents. And the results of patent-based studies would be driven by the biases that are kind of unique to patents, and the results of non-patent-based studies would be driven by maybe genuine innovations or at least the likely different biases that bedevil each particular category of non-patent data. So in another post I wrote called Do Studies Based on Patents Get Different Results, I looked at this. I did this kind of analysis for the articles covered in New Things Under the Sun. Across all 37 posts I've written that discuss both patent and non-patent evidence, I thought the two approaches basically agreed about 85% of the time. And the other 15% of the time, there was some mix of agreement and disagreement. And as discussed in that post, there are some potential biases in that analysis. But on the whole, I think this suggests that careful academic work does generally extract meaningful signal from patent data and evades at least the biggest sources of bias. So, to sum up, a large share, likely the majority, of inventions are not part of the patent record. And a large share of patents, possibly the majority, don't describe important components of technological progress. Other stuff, besides invention, drives a lot of patenting decisions. But innovation is also in the mix there. And so in aggregate, patent data is correlated with other measures of innovation, albeit with a lot of noise. Patents are not good enough to reliably measure innovation without a lot of adjustment. But there are a lot of ways that you can analyze patent data to pull out more signal and try to filter out more noise. And if you do that well, we can learn a lot that appears to be true and useful. So can we trust papers built on patent data? In short, I think the answer is yes. But the longer answer is that social science is hard, and we rarely have precise measures of the phenomena we care about. And patents, as used by the academic community, are not much better, or I think worse, than anything else you read about in these disciplines. Don't rely exclusively on patent data, but neither should you rely exclusively on any kind of data in the social sciences. I think the best we can do is usually see if multiple approaches to a problem converge on similar answers. And that's the premise of New Things Under the Sun, and it's what I plan to continue doing. Thanks for listening. And now it's time for the standard end of the episode boilerplate. You've been listening to a podcast from New Things Under the Sun, a living literature review with the mission of communicating what academia knows about innovation in accessible but rigorous research syntheses. New Things Under the Sun is a living literature review, which means I go back and update these research syntheses as new research is published or I discover it. The podcast you listen to is taken from the first published version of one of these syntheses. To see if there's been any updates about the claims made in this podcast, or to learn more about this project, head to newthingsunderthesun.com.